Pastor Mai, and welcome to this edition of Agenda. I'm Ewan Gorn. Campaigners are still pushing for lower prices from Manx Gas, with negotiations between the energy company and government on a new regulatory agreement still yet to reach a conclusion. Tynwald will discuss the issue on Tuesday, with some hopeful government will force Manx Gas's hand. And one of the largest protests in recent memory took place in Douglas last week, when more than 1,500 people turned out to support the Black Lives Matter movement. Negotiations with Manx Gas over a new regulatory agreement will be the subject of debate in Tynwald next week. There's uncertainty over the outcome after the politician leading the talks, Chris Thomas, MHK, was dismissed from the Council of Ministers in recent weeks. It leaves protesters who want lower gas prices and independent regulation of the island's energy sector unsure over what comes next. The man behind the campaign for a better deal with Manx Gas is Barry Murphy. I asked him whether the group's demands have changed.
What we're looking for right now is new legislation to be imposed on Manx Gas. As a group, we've decided that we can no longer run with voluntary regulation. We think at this stage, after 4 years of fighting and feeling, if you like, the letdown party in the arguments, we just feel that we need to have new legislation in place, and we need to have a new external regulator also in place. And we're also looking to get this rocky profit margin reduced substantially, but only if the government can somehow reduce the overall costs, fixed costs that Manx Gas have to pay on a monthly annual basis, because the rocky profit margin in itself being reduced will be no benefit to gas customers moving forward unless the fixed costs of Manx Gas moving forward are also reduced. That's basically what we're looking for. And in actual fact, if I can be a little bit more specific and a little bit more complicated, but try not to get too complicated, we're actually looking for the rocky profit margin to be defined by adopting the UK Competition and Markets Authority definition, which would exclude financing and intercompany loans, which we are led to believe that Manx Gas are currently allowed to implement, if you like, as a fixed cost. That's what we're looking for.
Is this basically, you've tried with negotiation, you've tried speaking to Manx Gas, now's the time to force their hand with the law? Is that sort of what you're saying?
Over time, I think what we've decided, or certainly what I've decided, is that being the really nice party, if you like, I mean, there's three parties there. There's the government, there's Manx Gas, and there's us, the gas consumers. And certainly from my perspective, I've tried and I think I've succeeded in being very nice and very diplomatic since day one. But what's very clear in all of this, certainly for me after the 4 years, is that the OFT, as much and all as it might like to try to be the problem solver in all of this, it cannot simply solve any problems for the gas consumer. It's basically powerless. And I think you probably, if you asked Martin Perkins his feelings on this, he probably at this stage would probably have to agree. I also believe that the OFT in many ways are too linked to government in this. There's like a conflict of interest, if you like, between the government as one of the three parties and the OFT, which is seen to be the stopgap or the one in between, but it's not, because it's linked to government. And that's the reason as to why I believe that we need to have an independent regulator overseeing gas regulation in the Isle of Man for gas consumers moving forward. So if gas consumers have an issue or they have a problem, as indeed we've had for the last 4 years, you know, they're in a better place, if you like, to come in and try and sort this out. Because what this voluntary agreement for the last 4 years clearly shows me is that there is absolutely no sorting any of it out. The only way it can be sorted out is through Tynwald. But it shouldn't be that difficult for me or any other gas consumer to sort out an issue without having to go all the way to the top of the political towers.
Well, to play devil's advocate, Barry, didn't you get a concession with the dropping of the standard banded charges, which was so controversial?
We did. We did get that. But we also were lobbying at the start for other issues as well, for other things, which we haven't had. But we did get that, and it was a start. But what we also managed to obtain was this NERA report, which was published back, from memory, in around about 2018. And clearly, that report said that changes had to be planned and changes had to be made in order for a good deal for gas consumers. And we haven't had really any of that. And that's the problem.
The negotiations obviously were going on, and then Mr. Thomas, previously Minister Thomas, got dismissed from Comin, which probably leaves it to the new policy and reform minister to pick that up, although we haven't had that confirmed. From what you were led to believe, were those negotiations going anywhere?
That's a good question. From what I was led to believe, I think, if I'm honest, that my feelings over the years have changed quite a large number of times. I've never really known exactly what to think from one month to the next. But if you ask me what I think right now, I think that there's a number of backbenchers support our fight for new regulation to be imposed on Manx Gas. I do believe that, but I actually think that Comin, or certainly the Chief Minister, would prefer to just have another 5-year voluntary agreement signed up and just put this matter to bed. What's going to happen moving forward, I honestly don't know, but I do know it's going to be a good conversation on Tuesday, and what the result of all of this will be, I'm not actually too sure, but I do think there's a split in what the politicians actually want, if you like.
Well, are you worried that Mr. Thomas is no longer the lead in those negotiations?
I think he would have been the right man to keep going and keep moving forward, and I think it was a mistake, if I'm honest with you, at this late stage to remove him as a minister. I think the removal of him as a minister has done us no favours. I think he probably has more voice from the backbenches now than he would have had sitting in Comin. So in actual fact, I suppose with every negative, you can bring forward a positive, you know?
That leads me to talking about the next sitting of Tynwald, where Mr. Thomas has put down a motion to sort of prompt government and the Manx Parliament to be of the opinion that they should crack on with drafting their own agreement into law. What do you make of that proposal by Mr. Thomas?
Full support. That's what I make of it. I give it full support. I think it's the only way forward. I've gone on record many times before to say that I don't really trust politicians too much, if at all. But in this case, I'm giving Mr. Thomas my full support, and our group has given Mr. Thomas their full support. So I think it's the only way forward. If this matter is ever going to be solved, Chris Thomas's motion is the way to go about bringing a resolve. You know, 4 years, Ewan, is far too long. There's been many negotiations, I'm pretty sure, between Chris Thomas and other members of the Gas Committee over the years to try and find a resolve on this. And I'm probably fairly sure that other MHKs and ministers have gone down to Manx Gas HQ to try to find a resolve to this. Because, you know, they don't want us people in the background kicking off and complaining, as we're rightly entitled to do. But they won't want that. I fully support it. I'm unsure of what's going to happen, and I'm unsure of how this thing is going to roll on Tuesday. I'm trying to learn more as I go along, you know, because certainly over the 4 years I've learned a lot, but I've still got a lot to learn. But full support, and that's where I am with it, 100%. I don't support in any way Chief Minister Quayle's idea that another 4 years, 5 years of voluntary agreement is the way forward with this. You know, if that's going to be the case, I vow to fight on for the next 4 or 5 years to bring about another change. I don't want to have to do that, though, but that's what I will do. I won't go away until we get a good deal.
I just wanted to ask you, finally, Barry, Manx Gas is linked to this, the same company as Jersey Gas and other companies. Ancala, which is the bigger group there, has energy concerns, you know, in all kinds of sectors, a lot of renewable energy as well. Are you concerned that your struggle over this issue is actually tied up with a greater conversation about the energy needs of the Isle of Man? And do you worry that because of that, your issue might be diminished in some way because there's a bigger conversation perhaps going on behind the scenes about energy going forward on the Isle of Man?
I think that's that concern, yeah. I don't know an awful lot about what conversations go on behind the scenes, though, and I'm certainly not going to even try to build up too much of a picture in my mind about what is going on behind the scenes. But there's definitely something going on. I suppose we're going back to the current report. The current report in many ways goes into the ideas for a greener world, certainly greener Isle of Man over the next 25 years. But, you know, as I said to another person who interviewed me about 2 or 3 months ago, we're not looking for a 25-year deal on our gas here. We're only looking for a good deal for the next 5 years. And what we've said is we've had a very bad deal for the last 4 years ever before the current report came into the public domain. So it's one thing talking about green issues and obviously doing our bit for a greener planet, but being ripped off year on year on year to the tune of at least 62% higher than the highest paying gas capped Ofgem customers in the UK is a totally different story. All we've really said as well is that we're not looking for miracles, but what we are looking for is at least a 20% reduction coming through our door and our bills That's not on the rocky profit margin. That's in our, on our bills coming through the door. And I don't believe that that's too much to ask. I think it's a very big compromise. And I also would go as far as to say that we should really be having a rebate for the last 3 to 4 years that we've actually been continually ripped off. But, you know, we're not going to get that. What we do know is that we will get it backdated back to January of this year. But there can be a million excuses for any one problem. But, you know, I'm sorry, in this case, the majority of them reasons, you know, they don't wash with me anymore.
That was Barry Murphy. Douglas Central MHK Chris Thomas was playing a central role in the gas negotiations and has an in-depth understanding of what's on the table. His motion for Tynwald tomorrow reads that Tynwald is of the opinion the Isle of Man government should give notice to Manx Gas terminating the agreement for regulation of the gas market dated from 2015 to impose regulation which covers the public supply of gas for retail customers, which conforms to UK regulatory best practice and is in line with other proposals and conclusions of the Gas Review Committee's report, which was published last year. And finally, to report all that back to Tynwald in a month's time by July 2020. Mr. Thomas explained more about his motion to Sian Cowper.
There's only so long that you can carry on negotiations if they're not actually getting to the place they need to get from the public interest point of view, from the gas consumer point of view, but also I think probably from Manx Gas Limited and its shareholders' point of view. We need clarity now. Three deadlines that were set by the Chief Minister through me in two cases have been missed. We initially said we were going to conclude things by December 2019. Then we said we were going to conclude things by 24th of April 2020. Then we said we would come to Tynwald in June with a decision about whether a voluntary agreement could be put in place or whether we needed to move over to imposing regulation on the public gas supply and the supplier in that market. I think we're now to that situation. So I've got a motion down on Tynwald, which was signalled back in April. In my view, and I hope government is persuaded and I hope Tynwald is persuaded, we should give 6 months' notice under the 2015 gas agreement, and we should move to impose regulation probably through a new bill, a new legislation, but there are other ways of doing it. The great thing about where we are, Sian, is that we haven't wasted 15 months. During those 15 months of negotiations, we've got to know what we need to decide around the gas agreement much more clearly. So we've got to make decisions about space heating in the context of climate change agenda. We've got to make decisions about how we deal with things like fuel poverty. And most importantly, we've got to make sure that we set up a level playing field in terms of the technologies, but in terms of also the players, in terms of how we approach how we heat our homes in the future. Everything's clear. We can... The risks that there are have been prepared for, and the management of them can be done effectively. And now I just hope that government and Tynwald make the bold decision to give clean notice under the 2015 agreement, which is a bad agreement, an agreement because of which I resigned in 2015 from the Office of Fair Trading as vice chairman. And we move over to regulation inside a legal statutory framework, as I've been calling for since 2013. My manifesto was clear about that. Principled politician, pre-declared positions are important for me, and the interest of the nation, the interest of the people I represent in Douglas Central and for the Isle of Man are best served now by giving notice under the 2015 gas agreement and moving to a legislative-based regulation regime with regulation imposed on the public gas supplier, Manx Gas Limited. Sian, it's important that people don't hear too much into this, though. Manx Gas Limited is a good company, and the shareholders behind it are exactly the sort of people we need in the long term in the island, because we need private sector infrastructure investment for the new world post-COVID-19 and as we move towards dealing with the climate emergency we're in. And I really do hope that that this all ends up with roses rather than grenades. But to get to that better situation, we need regulation imposed on Manx Gas, and we need the 2015 gas agreement torn up.
Now, your motion asks for a report back to Tynwald on this matter by July. I appreciate a lot of work's already gone on with this, but is a month long enough?
Yeah, it's very simple. We've given notice, and we're now working for 6 months to work out how we impose regulation. My time is available. Laurie Hooper and Anne Corlett worked brilliantly as part of the gas regulatory committee review, which reported back in February 2019. I can assure the public and everybody else involved that the everything is fully prepared. So it's completely time for government to report back in July that notice has been given, and that 6 months work, legislative work, policy work, organisational work is going on so that we have regulation imposed.
Chris Thomas, MHK. You're listening to Agenda on Manx Radio. It saw up to 1,500 people congregated in Douglas last week to take part in a peaceful protest on the Black Lives Matter campaign, one of the largest on the island in recent memory. The international cause was sparked by police killing of African American George Floyd in Minneapolis in the United States. Alex Watton has this report.
Douglas Promenade was quickly filled with demonstrators yesterday afternoon who met to show solidarity and raise awareness of racism in modern day society. One of the organisers, Barnard Mensah, said the huge turnout, however, was not expected.
I mean, we were looking about, you know, roughly about 500 people, but this has just gone past the, 1K mark. We're probably looking roughly about, you know, close to about 2,000 people that turned up.
As the march moved from the War Memorial to the Bottleneck car park, I spoke to one of the participants, Phil Matthews, who's chair of Amnesty International here. He told me he's been overwhelmed by the local stories to have emerged from such a global issue.
The thing that's really shook me this week was the stories of young black people on the island. And I wasn't aware of that. I had the same attitude that no, it's very slight, if anything, here. But I was horrified at the stories that I was reading this week. And we have to really make sure that everybody has the confidence to speak out on the island. I hope this march with all these hundreds of people here will give people the confidence to speak out, even if it's just somebody saying a slight remark, which you don't think is right, but you don't say anything normally. And that's what I hope will happen here on the island.
Well, at that south end of the promenade, the hundreds of protesters stopped for a 9-minute silence. After which, volunteers read out some anonymous accounts of racism experienced here on the island.
I am friends with a black teacher who has now left the island. Somebody called him an N-word and carved it into the desk. He complained to the head teacher, who told him the kid was only messing around and racism does not exist on the island.
I think back to when I was at school and there were a few black people in my year. They were popular kids and had a lot of friends, but as people became friendlier, I noticed they found it more and more acceptable to start making racist jabs and tried to cover it as a joke. What's worse is I knew how wrong it was, but in an effort to fit in, I was guilty of laughing once or twice. I'm not that ignorant anymore, and honestly, I'm so ashamed of myself for not speaking up.
The reception of the demonstration has been largely met with positivity. However, there had been concern over the ability to social distance in such large crowds, of course, due to the coronavirus pandemic. Well, police were present, working alongside the organisers to make sure people were split into groups and were wearing masks and gloves. On social media, after the event, officers thanked people who took part for making it as safe and COVID-compliant as possible.
One recently formed group which attended the demonstration is People of Colour Isle of Man. Alex spoke to one of the founding members about what is meant by people of colour.
I think the phrase people of colour in this context, yes, it's all encompassing. It includes people from various different countries. It includes people from various different nationalities. It includes people from the black community, from the Asian community, the Indian community, Pakistani community, Arab community. It includes basically everyone that identifies with being a person of colour. Obviously, it's not always the correct term to use, and again, that's something that we're going to be addressing with these open conversations and the platform that we have with POCIOM.
What appetite do you think there is for a group such as yours on the Isle of Man?
From the feedback that we've got so far, I think that there is a definite want for this type of education, this type of group, this type of open platform for honest conversations within a non kind of a non-judgmental zone. So I think there's definitely an appetite for it. And as well, off the back of that, that it's been displayed that there's, because of the understanding of what racism is, or the lack of understanding of what it means and what we're actually talking about, that as well is another form of appetite for a group like this.
And you are relatively new, of course. What's the reception been like to the group so far?
Honestly, the reception has been absolutely amazing. The public have been so supportive, really, really, really welcoming, really engaging. And it just puts, a really positive light on what we're trying to do. And it does view what we're trying to do as something that's needed and something that we want to take forward and keep going. Because this issue isn't just an issue for this point in time. It's not just an issue that is happening right now. It's been going on for a really long time, and it's going to keep going on for a really long time. And so what we don't want is for this to become a hot topic and something that's only talked about when there's a hype around it. It's something that is long lasting.
It's been well publicised in the last week that protesters at an anti-racism demonstration in Bristol tore down a statue of slave trader Edward Colston last week. With its maritime links, the Isle of Man played a role in the transport of humans as cargo throughout the 18th century. Wendy Thurkettle is the archivist at Manx National Heritage. She explained more about the island's involvement in the slave trade to me.
There's involvement on lots of different levels. The fact that we have a lot of very skilled mariners meant that officers, masters and crew signed up to work on the vessels that sailed out of Liverpool. So they were actually sailing on the voyages. There were people on island who were investing in the voyages to make money on the return from the cargoes, which were human, as we know, but also goods taken down to Africa and goods brought back from the Americas. And there were merchants on the island, and that's an aspect which not many people know about, the fact that the goods that were used to barter for slaves had been kept in warehouses on the island temporarily. They were collected by the Liverpool slave ships, and then those goods were then used to barter. The connection there is that people looking for making profit margins imported goods from the Dutch East Indies Company from Rotterdam, and they effectively lowered their overheads by not paying British customs and could then make more profit. So they were landing goods that had purchased, so things like gunpowder and brass pans and beads that were then used to barter for slaves.
As you've mentioned, the island at that time, people positioned themselves to take advantage of opportunities. Was this just one that emerged and was identified by people in that maritime industry?
Yeah, potentially. And of course, the island had excellent merchant connections, both legal and illegal. We have a history of smuggling, and positioned geographically for the vessels to call in at Manx ports en route to the Madeiras and then down to Africa. So there's a combination of factors that people could see opportunities and develop them over a period of years, especially the actual vessels calling at the island from about 1718, which is the earliest record in our customs records, up to 1764.
Now, there's been a very considered research done on this issue. Can you just talk us through some of the resources that are available for anyone who wants to do some reading and find out a bit more?
Well, a researcher, Frances Wilkins, published her work back in 1999, and she did a lot of her reading in the museum archives in the 1990s, but she also accessed sources in private hands elsewhere, and she helped to effectively join up the dots as to what the records were pointing towards. It isn't all immediately obvious, but she used, for instance, the custom records to show the goods being landed and then the instructions and then them going out again within days. There are letters of instruction for masters to call at the island. So a lot of it is very clear when you start putting it all together.
Wendy Thurkettle, archivist at Manx National Heritage. That's all from this programme. We'll be back with more from Agenda soon, and you can listen again to this episode online via the Manx Radio website or through Spotify as a podcast. But for now, Guru Mayu, and goodbye.